Hello and welcome to this episode of PaleoCast. I'm Laura Soule.
And I'm Caitlin Cleary.
And this is a special episode from SVP, which is Society of Vertebrate Paleontology annual meeting. So we've done SVP episodes before. You might remember hearing one that we did from Berlin last year. But this year, where was it?
It was in Dallas, Texas.
And Caitlin went by herself.
Yeah. Dave mailed me a recorder and sent me on my way. So I just kind of walked around shoving microphones in people's faces and asking them questions.
And this was kind of the first thing you'd done for
the first time I've ever interviewed anyone ever.
Okay. So I think it went pretty well considering.
Yeah.
So that's good. And this was a big meeting, right?
Yep.
75th anniversary?
Yeah, 75th anniversary. So there was a lot of historical information available, which made it really special. There were a lot of old photos from previous meetings and old documents. And so it was really interesting to walk around and see that aspect of it as well.
So we ended up with quite a bit of material. So we sort of got three mini episodes for you about SVP, which will all be up on the same page on our website. So you're listening to this one, this is the first one, and there will be two more. What are they kind of?
So we broke them down. There's one on educational outreach, and then there's another one on what people are doing scientifically, and then the third one is on the history of SVP.
Okay, great. So those three short episodes will all be up on the same page. So after you've listened to this one, the education one, come back and have a listen to the other two if you're interested.
I'm Dan Churi. I'm the paleontologist at Dinosaur National Monument, and I've been the paleontologist there for 36 years.
And can you tell me a bit about the quarry?
Well, the quarry is really famous as one of our great windows onto the world of Jurassic dinosaurs. It was originally found in 1909 by Earl Douglas of the Carnegie Museum, and he excavated there between 1909 and 1922 for the Carnegie. The Smithsonian came in for a year in 1923, and then Douglas came back in 1924 to collect 1 year for the University of Utah. So the historic excavation period runs about 15 years, and they actually crated up and shipped close to 800,000 pounds of dinosaur bone. That doesn't include rock removed to get to the bone. That was what was actually crated up, and most of it was taken by horse-drawn buckboard to railroad stations.
Can you tell me a bit about the digital quarry that you're working on now with the website and everything?
Sure. The quarry has a very long and complicated history. It became a national monument in 1915, so this year is our 100th anniversary of creation. And presently, the Carnegie Quarry is exposed within an all-glass building. The sandstone face is about 150 feet long and 50 feet high, and it has about 1,500 dinosaur bones exposed in place exactly as they were discovered. And so that's one of the really big things about dinosaur, is that really radically different approach to fossils in terms of leaving them in place. So historically, bones were collected and they went to museums for people to see. At Dinosaur, we turned that around and created a museum where the bones were and people could come out and see that. And that's been immensely successful and copied in many different places around the world. And now we're kind of taking that third big step and taking that quarry that's inside the building to the entire world by going online with the digital quarry project.
That's fantastic. So can you tell me exactly of what your goals are with the digital quarry project?
So Dinosaur is a very rich dinosaur quarry, and it has a very long and complex photographic, written, documentary, scientific research history. And we have a lot of records in our archives, correspondence, planning documents, historic photos. We have excavation and preparation notes. We have all the bones in the quarry face. And what we're trying to do in this project is to bring all that data together in a digital format and put it online and make it available to anyone who is curious about the quarry, whether you're a historian of science, a curious person about dinosaurs, or a researcher trying to plan how much time to spend on a dinosaur and which specimens are going to be of most interest to you.
That's great. And where can somebody go to see this online?
Okay, well, we have the preliminary site up now, so it's by no means full. We have lots and lots of additional material that will be added over the years. But if you want to see what we have up now, which is the kind of concept and some basic documents and information, go to www.carnegiequarry.com. That's CarnegieQuarry.
Hi, my name is Nicole Ridgewell, and I am a graduate student in Museum and Field Studies at the University of Colorado Boulder. The summer before last, I was an intern at Dinosaur National Monument, where I did a lot of work to help digitize the quarry wall there.
Okay, cool. Can you tell me a little bit about what you did specifically in terms of taking photos for the website?
Yeah, so we had a really nice high-definition camera that we used to try to get photos of the bones from. Basically, we tried to get every single angle that we could possible. So we used a telephoto lens and took pictures from the upper balcony. And then we actually got to do a lot of climbing on the wall, which was really cool because basically hardly anyone gets to go up there. And we when we were climbing on the wall, we took pictures from as many angles as possible. So sometimes in really awkward positions, but just trying to get everything we could.
Yeah. That's cool. Okay, and then where have these photos ended up?
So the photos are now online. CarnegieQuarry.com was just launched. And on that website, they have an interactive fossil quarry where you can click on each of the bones in the quarry. And when you click on the bones, you'll see information about it as well as one of the pictures that we took.
That's awesome. So one of the coolest things about Carnegie Quarry is that all of the bones are still in situ. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so how has this led to your interest now in in situ fossil preservation?
Yeah, because I'm getting my degree in museum studies, I've always been interested in taking care of fossils in museums. And that really intersected with the work I was doing at Dinosaur and the bones in the quarry there, because they are a permanent collection, but they're not in storage cases in nicely controlled conditions. But they're still fragile fossils and they need to be taken care of, but they have a lot of special needs because they're in situ.
Right, and is this something that you find in other places besides the dinosaur quarry at Carnegie?
Yeah, there are a lot of really spectacular sites that have in situ fossils. Another great example is the Mammoth Hot Springs in South Dakota, which is a really spectacular mammoth site.
Okay, and so how are the needs of these fossils that are in situ, how are they different than, you know, something that's in a box in a museum?
Yeah, well, they're not in controlled conditions. I mean, they might be in a building, but it's harder to control the environment when they're not in an exhibit case. They're also, you know, often on exhibit, and it's a great way to exhibit fossils. They have to be accessible to the public, so you have to figure out how to build walkways and ramps and among the bones, which can be a challenge, and also make sure they're accessible to researchers. And sometimes institute fossils aren't in a building, so then you have to make sure that they're going to be able to withstand any sort of rain or other weather that they're going to be exposed to.
And then, so the work that you guys did at Carnegie, documenting everything and putting it online so that people can see it, that's a really amazing thing. So researchers can go online and see what kind of fossils that you have there. Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's why part of the reason why we tried to take pictures from as many angles as possible so that researchers can see all of the different morphological elements of the bones, because in order to really see the bones up close, you have to climb up on the quarry wall, which not everyone is able to do, or I mean, they might, it might be even hard for them to just travel. And also, I mean, just in general, it's good to not have very many people climbing up there, because everyone who climbs up there, you know, you're going to loosen some of the rock, and it's just better to minimize the number of people who are accessing the bones directly.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Yeah.
My name is Natalie Toth, and I'm an education program specialist at the Natural History Museum of Utah.
Cool. And what is it that you have here today? What is this project?
So the program is called ROCKS, which stands for Real Opportunities to Connect Kids with Scientists. And what we did is created a series of three videos that we made available online that showcase the process of paleontology. So the first video is about fieldwork, second's about work in the fossil prep lab, the third is about taking students into collections and what kind of work goes on in collections. After the students, so we put these videos out for students and the public and teachers to watch. We did a hands-on outreach program with the students and teachers after they watched the videos to learn more about paleontology. Then we had a Skype session with our curator, Randy Ermis, where the students got to ask questions to Randy, and we wrapped up the whole experience by bringing the students to the museum on buses that the grant from the Paleontological Society paid for, so they could meet Randy in person.
That's so cool. So what did the kids get out of it? Were they really excited to get to like meet a real paleontologist and see real fossils?
Definitely. They loved handling the fossils. All of the students are from a Title I school that have most of them had never even been to a museum before, so I think just having that experience was really fun for them.
So I'm Randy Ermis. I'm the curator of paleontology at the Natural History Museum of Utah and an associate professor in the Department of Geology and Geophysics at the University of Utah. So we have some really super exciting projects going on at the museum right now, intended to reach all sorts of different school children. As a museum, we have statewide reach, but one of the real problems is that only a subset of those kids can actually make it to the museum. And there's really no substitute for those direct interactions with a scientist or, you know, getting to see real fossils that you get when you visit the museum. And so we've got a couple of really cool new projects that are focused on trying to transport that experience to the classroom.
And can you tell me a little bit about some of them specifically?
Yeah, so we have, first of all, we've got the ROCKS project, which stands for Real Opportunities to Connect Kids with Scientists. And there what we did is we put together a couple of short videos, which are available for anyone to see on YouTube, that sort of introduced the process of paleontology to the kids. And then they had some in-class programming with casts and other specimens that were facilitated by our staff. And they Skyped with a paleontologist at the museum, and then sort of the putting it all together is that we were able to fund buses for these children that otherwise wouldn't be able to visit the museum to come to the museum and not only see the exhibits, but actually get a tour of collections and see all the awesome fossils we have and talk to our paleontologists. And these were fourth graders, so it was a really awesome experience for them. And we hope to expand. We got funding from the Paleontological Society to pilot the program, and we're hoping to expand it in future years now. The second project is called ACT, or Advanced Critical Thinking, and this is really a way to get inquiry-based learning embedded in the curriculum for these students in a way that is much deeper than is otherwise possible with your typical curricula. And so, you know, as sort of a study system, we're examining the mystery of how the Cleveland Lloyd dinosaur quarry formed, which is this giant bone bed with all these bones of Allosaurus and other dinosaurs that's 150 million years old. And it's a mystery even to paleontologists. There's still a lot of debate about how and why it formed. And we want to use this as an example of how the scientists are still trying to figure things out. We have multiple working hypotheses, and really give the evidence to students and have them make inferences and come up with conclusions about what happened there. And as part of that, we've been digitizing some of our specimens, some of the cooler specimens from the site, so that they can look at both digital 3D representations as well as 3D printed physical objects of the bones and really get a sense of what they're like, including bones with bite marks and pathologies and all sorts of weird stuff.
So as paleontologists, what do you think we have that's special that really gets kids excited about science?
Well, I always call paleontology a gateway science because it sort of sucks you into science as a little kid, right? That and astronomy are like the two big things that really draw people into science. And I think, unfortunately, all too often when we teach science in the classroom, it really takes all the creativity and wonder out of it, and so people lose interest. And so we need projects like this to keep that interest there and like encourage people to go into STEM careers or kids to at least think about it, you know, and because it's so key. We need more scientists and more critical thinkers out there. And And you do that by exciting them about the work, not teaching dry facts. And dinosaurs are one of the best ways to do that because everybody loves dinosaurs, especially as a kid.
Hi, my name is Carolyn Levitt Bouzian, and I am the collections manager for the paleontology department at the Natural History Museum of Utah.
So you got to bring this project directly to kids in the classroom. How did they interact and respond to the materials?
Yeah, we had 3D prints and iPads with the stuff downloaded on them and some supplemental materials. And it was neat to see the kids interact with it because different kids learn in different ways. So the kids that really liked hands-on stuff really liked the 3D printed models and were able to hold it up and point and make comparisons, whereas the kids who know how to use iPads better than I do were flying through the teeth and using them for comparative purposes. So I think that they really liked learning in that way.
And what did you get out of the experience?
It was a really interesting experience for me. I don't do a lot of teaching in my job. I do mostly tours, but it was really fun being able to go to the classrooms and see how they were learning and see how excited they were for paleontology. And I worked with really amazing educators who taught me a lot about the new standards in education and how it's more about the journey of learning how to do something instead of finding the right answer.
And why do you think a project like this is important?
Well, I think it's important for having kids learn in different ways and bringing science in the classroom. But I also think it has to do a lot with bringing paleontology to kids. Presenting it at the Society of Vertebrate Paleontology Conference, I think, is really valuable because lots of museums and universities are now 3D imaging the specimens that they have, and then they don't know what to do with it. And what we're presenting is a project, an outreach project, that they can implement in their own classrooms or their museums if they want to develop an outreach program.
Hi, I'm Madeline Runberg, and I'm with the Natural History Museum of Utah, and I am the project director for Research Quest.
And can you tell me a little bit about the educational side of this project?
Absolutely. As educators, we were very interested in how we could leverage our collections and research with 3D technologies to improve critical thinking and create more exciting and engaging student learning experiences in the classroom. And so we went into the classrooms with our research, our paleontology research and our collections items, and we posed these questions to students, and we asked them to, you know, let us know, is this something that's interesting to work on or not, and how did they think it impacted their learning. And in the meantime, we had cognitive scientists from the university who were working with us to actually measure the learning that was happening. So while the students were reflecting, we were actually studying, and we found that, in fact, the types of activities we had envisioned were nicely aligned with helping students to develop these skills. And so then this last year, we went into multiple classrooms and we worked with over 200 students, and then we had another 200 students serve as a control group to study more nitty-gritty pieces of what they were accomplishing. And so as we compared our pre and post tests in our control and our experimental groups, what we found is our experimental group, those that engaged with Research Quest, actually had a statistically significant increase in their critical thinking as compared with the control group. So we found that to be really promising, and now we're continuing to iterate the program, and we'll be piloting it this year in our classrooms and continuing the learning research around it. But hopefully we'll have a better understanding of not just how to use our research and collections through digital technologies, but how to use them in such a way that they actually positively impact learning.